Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Welcome, everybody, tonight. It's such a pleasure to welcome you all to launch Helen Thorpe's new book, Just Like Us. While this is Helen's first book, she certainly is no newcomer to the world of journalism, that's for sure. But first, a little background on Helen. Born in London, Helen immigrated with her Irish parents. Her mom's right here. To the United States when Helen was a child. She grew up in New Jersey and then went on to college at Princeton, where she got her BA in English and then a master's at Columbia. She's worked for the New York Observer and the New Yorker, and among others, and later she became a staff writer for the Texas Monthly and moved to Austin, Texas. She left there to go freelance after about 5 years, and she focuses her work mostly on politics and culture. Perhaps most intriguingly, in 1996, the Walt Disney Movie Studio hired her to report on the murder of Irish journalist Veronica Guerin, and a movie was subsequently made from that. That Helen came to Denver sometime later is certainly our gain. She brought her pen to Westward and 5280, and if you haven't seen the piece that she wrote about Pablo, called Head of the Class, some 5 years ago, you might take a look at it online. Kind of a precursor to what we're looking at with her book today. Now she's written this most compelling and thought-provoking and complex book, Just Like Us, on the very human subject of immigration. And no matter where one stands on the subject, reading Helen's book will bring greater insight to the complexity of the issues. As a side note to the craft of the writer, I thought you might be interested to know I was reading an interview with Helen a while back, and she spoke about how she kind of viewed herself as somewhat disorganized as she gave special attention to organizing her notes for this book. Maybe she'll tell us a little bit about that. It's pretty remarkable, and so is she. Welcome, Helen Thorpe.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that incredibly warm welcome and introduction. The general subject of this book is one where, emotions run high and people have very different opinions. And I really believe that it's important to respect all the different opinions that people have on a subject like this. And I've tried really hard in this book to do that. So it was kind of hard to pick what part to read because I think you could get a really different impression based on which chapter I read. In part of the book, I spent a lot of time with former Congressman Tom Tancredo, and I really tried to understand his family background and his thoughts. I also tried to deal squarely with the fact that illegal immigrants sometimes commit crimes in our community, and we're all horrified when some of the things that have happened here happen. But what I thought I really wanted to do tonight was give you a sense of the main characters of the book, in particular one of the students that I really focused on, because I think that they are so alive, and that they kind of carry this book. Their story carries this book, and I think you'll get a sense of who they are in some of the selections that I wanted to read tonight. So. The book is about four young women. I'll just give you a tiny bit of background so you can kind of understand where we're jumping in. The book is really about four young women, and they're very close friends. They've grown up together here in Denver for the most part. They've gone to middle school and high school here and taken classes together and gotten into advanced placement classes together. But they're split down the middle in terms of their immigration status. One of the students was born here and is a U.S. citizen by birth, though her family also emigrated from Mexico, and she even lived in Mexico for a period of time. One of the students has earned a green card, and two of them don't have papers. And what you need to know in order to kind of follow along here is that the two students who don't have papers, their names are Maricela and Yadira. And then their two friends who do have papers are Clara and Elissa. And at this particular moment in time where I'm about to start reading, really the person who kind of captures the book is Maricela. She's a person of great energy, and I'm going to read passages really about her, and you'll see the other friends with her. But at this moment in time, Maricela previously has always been an incredibly responsible person. She's not only in school earning straight A's, but she's working a full-time job from 3 to 11 p.m. In a grocery store. She's helping her parents pay the bills. She's also somehow finding time to do extracurricular activities. She's been registering people to vote. She's performing in dance recitals, all this kind of stuff. But she's become somewhat demoralized because she's learning that she doesn't have all the opportunities that her friends do. So she started recently kind of sliding into trouble a little bit, maybe coming to school a little later than she used to. And her friends who have papers and have more opportunities, Clara and Elissa, are sort of trying to hang on to her as best they can and keep her in school, and they're just really hoping she doesn't drop out. They've just gone to a class, Clara and Elissa, where they were expecting Maricela to show up, but she didn't appear yet. That was her first class of the day, so she's missed chemistry so far. "You can sit here because Maricela isn't here today," Elissa told me, pointing to the desk next to hers. "Maricela is here," another student piped up. "I just saw her." "She wasn't here for first period," Elissa objected. "No, Maricela is here today." 2 minutes after the bell rang, Maricela burst into the classroom. She pulled a desk up close to us and whispered in Spanish that she had overslept. "That's no excuse," Clara replied tartly in English. Maricela said her grandparents were visiting at the moment, forcing her to sleep on the couch. Her mother was supposed to wake her up at 5:30, but had not woken her up until 7. Still, Maricela had taken the time to look sexy. She was wearing black platform shoes, tight black trousers with pink print pinstripes, a black lace top with spaghetti straps, 6 gold rings, 3 on each hand, and a gold necklace. She had curled her medium-length hair and then secured the curls on top of her head with multiple bobby pins. Bill Paul... Oh, sorry, there's one thing I forgot to tell you. I didn't want to give away too much about the people that I'm writing about, so I did change their names, and I also changed the name of their high school. So we are in Theodore Roosevelt High School in Denver, Colorado. and the names of their teachers have been changed also. And we're about to meet one of those teachers. Bill Paul, who taught AP Calculus, wrote an integral on the board and demonstrated a shortcut that told whether the integral converged. The shortcut was called the P series. The teacher had barely finished writing the result on the board when Maricela interrupted him. "Wait, I have a question," she called out. "Can you do that P thing when you have a polynomial on top?" "Yes, you can," he told her. Maricela's irrepressible curiosity amused the teacher. He had demonstrated the use of the P-series using a relatively simple equation, and she was worried about whether she could use the same tool to analyze a much more complicated problem. The teacher wrote more integrals on the board and asked the class to divide up into pairs and apply the P-series to each. Maricela pulled her desk close to a tall, big-boned student named Miguel. "Okay, so which one diverges?" Maricela asked out loud. She conducted a running monologue about infinity and convergence as Miguel listened obligingly. They finished before anybody else. Once Elissa had also solved the problem, she turned her attention back to Maricela's failure to show up for first period. "Why can't you wake yourself up?" Elissa asked. "I slept in the living room," Maricela protested. "I didn't have a clock." "Let's focus here, guys," Bill Paul admonished as he wrote another problem on the board. The girls worked assiduously until they figured out the answer to the teacher's next question. Then Maricela took out a compact and began applying coffee-colored face powder. Clara asked about an assignment for another class, which led Elissa to pull out a book entitled Literature. Bill Paul was explaining that they would be taking practice tests all week to prepare for the upcoming AP exam when he noticed what Maricela and Elissa were doing. "Hey, guys, girls, could you put that away till lunch?" They put away the makeup and the literature book. "Gracias," said the teacher. "De nada," said Maricela in a saucy voice. Clara poked Maricela with a pen to keep her in line. "¿Cómo se dice derivative in Spanish?" asked their teacher. "Derivado," replied Elissa. The teacher wrote the following on the blackboard. AP test. Finance and functions. Derivatives. Sketching graphs. Optimization and related rates. Integration. "I like integration," Maricela observed. "Sort of," appended Clara. "Mr. Paul," Maricela called out, "are related rates the same as growth and decay problems?" He explained they were not exactly the same thing, although they both had to do with the rate at which things change. He added it was a good question. "When are we taking this test?" asked Elissa. "Tomorrow," said their teacher. "We're taking this test tomorrow?" shrieked Elissa. "It doesn't count," explained Maricela, who had managed to pay attention while applying her makeup. Bill Paul wrote a complicated equation on the board. Maricela jiggled her feet. Elissa put her head down on her desk, and Clara leaned so far back that she slanted. "Does that converge or diverge?" the teacher asked. "It diverges," Maricela answered. "How about this one?" "It diverges too," volunteered Maricela. It seemed hard for Maricela to get herself to school, but once she was there, she lit up the classroom. When the bell rang, her friend Yadira hovered at the door, waiting. So Yadira, you might remember, is the other student who also doesn't have papers. The two illegal girls typically spent their lunch hour together. "Should we go to McDonald's or Wendy's?" Maricela asked. "McDonald's," Yadira decided. They went in the worn bronze truck Maricela shared with her parents. A crucifix, a pine tree air freshener, and a collection of Mardi Gras beads dangled from the rearview mirror. On the way, the two girls talked about what they'd done over the previous weekend. Maricela had gone dancing in a Mexican nightclub, while Yadira had gone to see The Passion of the Christ. "We're suffering from senioritis," Maricela announced. After lunch, the girls returned to Theodore Roosevelt for their last class, AP Literature. They were studying concrete poetry, in which words or phrases are written in a shape that illuminates a poem's theme. Their teacher, Ms. Brown, gave them Dylan Thomas's Vision and Prayer, which has stanzas in the shape of diamonds, as an example. Then she had them write an original concrete poem. When Ms. Brown asked for volunteers to read their poem out loud, Maricela raised her hand. She read, "I'm confused. Am I going to college? Should I obey my parents? I can't find my identity. I am confused. I am lost. I am a teenager." "Beautiful," exclaimed Miss Brown. "Wonderful. Is that your shape poem?" "It's in the shape of a question mark," Maricela replied, holding the piece of paper up for her teacher. "I don't know if you can see it." Miss Brown beamed at her. So that's our main character and her friends. They're facing this dilemma, which becomes a little more apparent as time goes on, when they're in their senior year of high school and all kinds of different opportunities are becoming available for Clara and Elissa, and the same opportunities are not as easily available for Maricela and Yadira. And this becomes kind of increasingly painful for Maricela in particular, as Yadira starts to win some opportunities. Yadira manages to secure a private benefactor, and it starts to look like possibly Maricela might be the only one of the foursome who could get left behind. And in her school, this kind of plays out dramatically, and I'll read another passage where you see some of this stuff happening. And the one thing that you need to know in this next part is that since we last were spending time with Maricela, her family has moved to a new apartment rather abruptly. So we're back in the school again. When I met her in the hallway, Maricela was on her way to Chicano studies. In that class, she sat down beside Leon, a burly guy with whom she was friends. Maricela rummaged around in her capacious purse, pulled out a bottle of saline solution, and fished a contact lens out of her eye. Noticing that Yadira was absent, Maricela cried, "I miss her quietness." The class discussed family values and fell into a heated debate about abortion. When another individual observed that infants were precious, Maricela responded, "You don't just have to think about how pretty the baby is. You have to think about its future. What if you can't offer them anything?" On the way to her next class, Maricela passed a tall student with a flat top and reached out to pinch his cheek. This was Gabriel, the sophomore she had recently started dating. When I asked if the relationship was serious, Maricela laughed a little bit and said she liked younger men. While flirting with Gabriel, Maricela radiated confidence, but this attribute faded from her countenance later in the day as she listened to her fellow seniors recount their latest triumphs regarding college. One such conversation took place that afternoon after Maricela's sociology class broke into small groups to discuss prejudice. Maricela and two other students chose to examine the tensions between U.S.-born and Mexican-born students at Roosevelt, whom they referred to respectively as Chicanos and Mexicanos. None of the students at Roosevelt High called themselves Hispanic, a label used mainly by outsiders. Latino was an umbrella term that encompassed virtually the entire student body and wasn't useful in terms of allowing them to distinguish themselves from one another. Some students came from families who'd settled in Colorado before the Mayflower had even set sail, and they occasionally used the term Spanish for themselves. But most students identified themselves as Mexicanos or Chicanos. Since the 1960s, activists had used the term Chicano to signify participation in a civil rights movement, but at Roosevelt, it was typically used to claim native-born status. Chicanos often resented the immigrants who had moved into their neighborhoods and spoke a different language. They sometimes made fun of Spanish speakers by calling them Ched or Cheddar, a derogatory term derived from ranchera, the country-style ballad favored by many Mexicanos. Maricela was intimately familiar with the divisions at Roosevelt and often felt caught in the middle. Her achievements were too great for her to fit in with the majority of the school's Mexicano students easily, yet she did not identify with the Chicanos either. "Ever since I've been here, I haven't felt American as much. I mean, not all the way," she told me later. "I always stand out, the color of my skin, my accent, my background. But in my family, I stand out too. I speak Spanish, but not as well as they do. That's the hardest part. You don't know who you are. You don't know exactly where you belong." After Maricela finished writing up the report their teacher had assigned, which was due before the end of class, her classmate Daniela mentioned that she had just gone to an interview at the University of Denver. "What did you wear?" asked Maricela. "Jeans," said Daniela, who was a Chicana student. "Jeans? And a blouse, but I got in." "You got in with money?" Maricela asked. "Yeah. How much?" I think like 7,000. I'd like to go to the University of Colorado, Maricela said with a sigh. Did they accept you? Daniela asked. Oh, I didn't apply, Maricela said in an offhand tone. The deadline was really early. Actually, she hadn't applied because she didn't qualify for in-state tuition. But Maricela did not want to reveal this to a Chicana. Daniela indicated she knew about the early deadline at that school. You got accepted there, too? Asked Maricela. Uh-huh, said Daniela. Afterward, as we walked downstairs to her calculus class, I asked Maricela if it had been hard to listen to Daniela talk about the prestigious schools that had accepted her. Yeah, but I'm used to it, she said stoically. Then I mentioned that her close friends Clara and Elissa had just gotten interviews with the Daniels Fund. Oh, I would be preparing for that right now, cried Maricela with obvious regret. So I probably should have said this earlier. She had been invited to compete for a Daniels Fund scholarship, but then she wasn't able to supply all of the information that they needed, and it was sort of decided that students who didn't have a Social Security number were not going to be eligible, so she wasn't able to remain part of that. When we walked into calculus class, however, Maricela greeted Clara and Elissa warmly, as if nothing was wrong. She mentioned that she had taken her little brother to his school that morning before driving to Roosevelt. Oh, is this referring to your lateness? Elissa said pointedly. Maricela ignored this remark. You guys, on Saturday, I'm going to have a sleepover at my house, she announced. Can you come? What for? Asked Elissa. For inaugurating the apartment. The girls settled into their seats and pulled out their calculus textbooks. On the blackboard, their teacher, Bill Paul, wrote, instantaneous rate of change, slope of tangent line. Then he wrote a problem that he wanted the students to solve. The class was silent as everybody bent down to work on the equation. Maricela got the answer first. I need a Spanish-speaking person, the teacher announced. Who wants to be the Spanish-speaking person who gets the extra bonus point? Me, called Elissa. Me, called Maricela. Me, called Clara. All three girls thrust their hands into the air. Nobody else volunteered. I think I saw Elissa's hand first, said Bill Paul. He had to call a parent who spoke only Spanish and needed an interpreter. The teacher dialed a phone number and handed the receiver to Elissa. When Elissa returned to her seat, Maricela asked about the Daniels Fund interview. Elissa pulled out the letter she had received and showed it to Maricela. I'm so happy for us, said Elissa. Me too, said Maricela gamely. Clara pulled a different letter out of her backpack. She ran her finger down the piece of paper with her brow furrowed. At Colorado College, tuition is $38,324, Clara announced. Guess how much I got. Like the whole thing? Maricela ventured. That's right. Oh my God, Maricela screamed. Congratulations, I have to run out the door. I think I just swallowed my gum. Clara giggled uncontrollably as Maricela bolted out of the classroom. What's going on? Bill Paul demanded. She got a full ride to CC, Maricela cried from the doorway. That's why I was almost choking. Bill Paul turned to Clara. You got a free ride to Colorado College? He marveled. All right. The bell rang. Maricela had done a seamless job of acting. She had been funny. She had been gracious. Inside, however, the familiar sensation of watching Clara and Elissa move forward with their lives as she remained stuck in place left her feeling terribly alone. Maricela had a hard time staving off a dark hopelessness. Where would she find the time to sort everything out? Senior year was rapidly unspooling. All her friends knew where they were going to college already. Intellectually, she understood that it was not her fault that she did not have a Social Security number and could not figure out how to pay for a college education. But she considered herself the culprit regardless. She felt it was her fault that she could not keep up with her peers. Ashamed of her unworthiness, she buried her emotions as deeply as she could. She didn't want her friends to know what she was experiencing because she feared they would look down on her. While Maricela kept her mounting unease almost entirely hidden, it remained discernible to those who knew her well, for in the weeks to come, there was an increasingly brittle quality to her cheerfulness, an escalating theatricality about her enthusiasm. And I want to read just one more brief section that kind of completes this narrative arc, I guess. We're going to return to the school, and suddenly things are going to be a little bit different. There's possibility in the air, and a few new people show up, and I just want to explain some of the names that you're going to hear who've been introduced in other parts of the book. There's a woman, Irene Chavez, the girls actually say Irene, who has been a mentor to these students for a long time, and she's going to be mentioned. And also the name of another undocumented student who'd been in the newspaper here in Denver, Jesus Apodaca, is mentioned as well. There's also a very warm-hearted, incredibly helpful secretary at the school who's constantly supporting these students, and her name is Miss Valdez. And the students are going to we're going to see them in the office. It's called it's got a horrible long name. It's like the Post-Secondary Options Counseling Office, or Post-Secondary Options Office. And we're going to see them there, and that Miss Valdez is often there. 3 days later, I returned to Roosevelt High and found the two illegal girls in a state of greatly heightened animation. Hope had arrived unexpectedly in the form of Cesar Mesquita, the director of diversity enrollment for the University of Denver. The University of Denver was a private school with an excellent faculty and a prestigious reputation. It was not known for the diversity of its student body, and to address that situation, university officials had been pursuing enterprising students from local inner-city high schools. The university had developed a particularly close relationship with Roosevelt, and last week a recruiter had sought out Maricela, Yadira, Clara, and Elissa after reading about their accomplishments in the local paper, where they had been featured in a story about student leadership. In the process, the girls had learned that the admissions office was still considering applications and that university officials knew of a Republican businessman who sponsored immigrant students. This businessman was now paying for the education of more than a dozen bright students who lacked Social Security numbers, including Jesus Apodaca, at a number of colleges all around the state. In the past few days, Yadira and Maricela had completed applications to University of Denver. Elissa had not applied because she wanted to go to Regis, and Clara had already applied to DU. And they had also gone to the campus for hastily arranged interviews. Now Mesquita wanted to meet with Maricela and Yadira in the post-secondary options office at Roosevelt to discuss the donor who helped immigrant students. The two girls had dressed up for the occasion in black slacks and fancy blouses. This had been Irene's idea. She had wanted the girls to make a good impression. She didn't want them to look like they'd come straight from the barrio. Irene had instructed Maricela to go easy on the makeup and not to rat her hair. Sleek, Maricela, sleek, she said. And she had taken Yadira shopping at the Gap for a new suit. Meanwhile, Clara had informed Mesquita that she had won a scholarship from the Daniels Fund, which suggested that she might not need the support of the Republican donor, but Mesquita still wanted to recruit her. He had arranged to meet with Clara after he spoke with Maricela and Yadira. Maricela and Yadira sat down at a table facing Mesquita, who was tall and burly and had an easygoing manner. Basically, the two of you are nominated for this very, very good scholarship, he told them. It's an outside donor who gives the money, and the two of you, along with Clara, are in the running. Mesquita explained that the donor was out of the country and might not be able to make a decision for several weeks. I know you're both considering other schools and thinking about things, but I strongly encourage you to wait a little bit longer. If you do get this scholarship, you won't have to worry about anything. I know this makes you very nervous, but just hang in there. Who else is being considered? Yadira asked. You both, and Clara, and also a student from Manuel High School. Basically, the four of you are in the running. So how many students will get the scholarship? Yadira wanted to know. At least two. Maricela groaned. I know. She's shaking over here, said Mesquita. Somebody give her some juice. While Maricela's emotional state was easy to read, Yadira wore a tight, closed expression. You're not mad at me, are you, Yadira? Mesquita asked playfully. Yadira shook her head, embarrassed. Clara arrived in blue jeans and a green sweater. She had less at stake and appeared more at ease. Before Mosquita could begin talking with Clara, however, Maricela asked for his advice about filling out a financial aid form. It asks for a social security number or passport number, and there's a box that asks whether you're a permanent resident or not. Do you have any of those numbers? Mosquita asked. Maricela shook her head. Did you check the box saying you're a resident? Maricela shook her head again. She knew that some undocumented students lied about their status, even going so far as to write down a fake social security number, but she had been honest. She pushed the half-completed form over to Mosquita so he could see for himself. Okay, you're all right then, he said. Mosquita told the girls he would let them know the instant he had any news. Do you check your email regularly? He asked. Not regularly, said Maricela, but I could start to. But did I get accepted into DU? I don't know yet, said Mosquita. Because Ms. Valdez said you sent an email saying we're both accepted. No, I didn't send that email, said Mosquita. Let me look into it. Ms. Valdez, yelled Maricela. Mosquita held up his hand. You have an incredible resume, and your interview went very, very well, so don't worry about it. Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was somebody else. Don't be nervous, Mosquita counseled. I know, but it's an exciting time. Very exciting. So I'm going to kind of skip over a section here where we're sort of waiting interminably to hear back from DU about, are they going to get the money or not? Will they both get to go, or what's going to happen? Till we find out. And in the interim, the senior prom occurs. And there's one new person who's going to join us now, and this is Maricela's mother, Josepha. And she has worked as both a maid cleaning residential houses and also as a janitor in commercial properties. As soon as the major distractions of the dance showcase and the senior prom had passed, Maricela and Yadira grew increasingly nervous. Days passed with no word from Mosquita. After a week, both girls went to see Miss Valdez, but she had no news. Later, Yadira and Maricela were supposed to perform their dance routines again downtown, and after they boarded the bus that was waiting in the school's parking lot, Maricela urged that they call the DU admissions office. Yadira gave her the number for the woman who ran the university's international admissions department. This woman told Maricela that she had some bad news. The donor had not elected to sponsor her. The university could give Maricela $10,000 in aid designated for international students, but a year's tuition at the school cost four times that amount, and she would have to come up with the other $30,000 on her own. Stunned, Maricela gave the phone to Yadira and watched her friend's face as she spoke to the woman. Yadira looked back at Maricela the whole time. You got it, huh? Maricela said, after Yadira hung up the phone. Yeah, replied Yadira, her eyes all watery. Yadira didn't know whether she was crying out of happiness at her good fortune or unhappiness at Maricela's bad luck. Maricela felt numb but managed to give Yadira a hug. It was hard for them to talk to each other for the rest of the day. Maricela moved through her dance steps automatically, spinning when she was supposed to spin and catching Yadira when she dipped, but inside she'd turned to ice. After they returned to Roosevelt, Maricela surprised herself by snapping at a girl who said she was so sorry. Somehow the news had spread already. Maricela felt exposed. She had been compared to her best friend and judged to be worth less. Too upset to stay in school, Maricela tried to leave, but in the parking lot, her truck wouldn't start. She called her mother, and as soon as Josepha arrived, Maricela broke down. ¿Qué pasó? ¿Qué pasó? Josepha kept asking, but Maricela was crying too hard to get the words out. Finally, she managed to say that she hadn't won the scholarship. No te preocupes, mija. Oh, I'm going to mangle the Spanish, sorry. Josepha said, crying, don't worry, my child. Guardaré suficiente dinero para escuela de belleza. I'll save enough money for beauty school. Ay, mamá, replied Maricela. What else could she say? Maricela knew that Josepha considered beauty school a significant accomplishment and did not want to hurt her mother's feelings by pointing out that she considered trade school beneath her. She never brought up the scholarship again. When she returned to school, Maricela acted as though she had no concerns. Secretly, she was acutely disappointed in herself for being incapable of conquering her illegality when Yadira had overcome the same impediment. But Maricela hid her self-doubt because she was tired of being at odds with her friends. She played the party girl, talking about clubs and nightlife and anything except what would happen after June. Irene Chavez and Miss Valdez saw right through her act and worried about Maricela's volatile nature. Earlier in the book, we learned that earlier in high school, Maricela actually attempted suicide at one point when she was experiencing difficulties, and I'm going to sort of refer to that obliquely. Aurora Valdez told Irene that Maricela was the most sensitive of the foursome. Irene agreed. Maricela was the toughest and yet the most sensitive one. They hoped she didn't try to hurt herself again. Maricela dropped the false cheeriness when she got home, where she was listless and spent hours in her bedroom under the framed photographs of her dual attributes. Sorry, she's got these two photographs in her bedroom, and one is kind of her in like a sexy red dress, and the other is kind of her looking very pensive. And earlier I say that this kind of represents her dual nature. She's the sex pot and the thinker. Sorry. Where she spent hours in her bedroom under the framed photographs of her dual attributes. Sometimes she did her homework, but often she did not bother. She would mostly talk on the phone or just sit around. One day, while cleaning her room, she came across two bags of material that she'd collected from the colleges that had once wanted to recruit her. She sat down and went through the glossy brochures. At first, she made sarcastic comments to herself as she read the pamphlets, but then she became unbearably sad. She lay down on her bed thinking about all those gorgeous college campuses. She envisioned what her life was going to be like without a college degree and saw bad things coming, working at King Soopers forever or marrying young just to get out of the house. She felt certain that she would disappoint her parents. "I mean, they work at maintenance jobs," she told me. "I've seen how many hours a week they work and how they still struggle. My dad, ever since he got here, that's all he's done. He cleans stores in the night. I didn't want to do that, and I didn't want him to see me like that, because I know that even though he does that kind of job, he doesn't want me there. He doesn't want any of his children there."
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.